We're doing Pirkei Avot. We're holding in the second chapter, the seventh Mishnah. We began the Mishnah and we'll start again from the beginning. And the second chapter had taken us back chronologically to Hillel, even though we had gone up to Rebbe, the end of the Tanoim. Now we're going back and we're quoting from Hillel. Hu haya omer. Hillel used to say, Marbe basar, one who consumes a lot and then is corpulent, he has much flesh, he's heavy set. Marbe rima, ultimately he causes that there'll be many vermin consuming his body. Meaning, we sometimes view it as though, I'm getting a little bit more, filling up, I'm eating more. Says ultimately there'll be more vermin consuming him. What do I care if there are more vermin consuming me or less vermin consuming me? So our sages teach us that kasharima lamet kemachat bivsar hechai, that when the vermin consume the dead, it's as painful as a needle going through the flesh of the living. So this is the concept that the Gemara in Bracha says, and it's interesting that the commentaries expand on it over here. And there's a large discussion, what does that mean? When a person's dead, does he feel anything? So it would seem that not. So then what does it mean that the vermin consuming him is as painful as a needle going through live flesh? So some want to say it means that's how the nefesh feels. Others want to say that's how we should feel when we're alive, just at the thought that we'll be eaten by vermin. There are all kinds of explanations offered here. But on the surface, it just means it's a painful experience, ultimately. Bottom line, when a person dies, he shouldn't think that the worms consume him and he knows nothing about it. On some level, either it affects his nefesh, his neshama, on some level, it hurts him. And so, when a person just gets fat, he should know that he's just increasing the number of times he'll be feeling this painful feeling when he's consumed, ultimately. Marbe nechasim, when one has much wealth, he has be it money, be it objects. Marbe daga, so he's increasing his worries. He has to worry about being robbed. He has to worry about being taxed. He has to worry about people's jealousy. Again, we're taking things which ordinarily people see as a positive, and we're pointing out that there is a strong negative aspect to it. There was once a chassid who used to daven. He said, God, save me from pizur hanefesh, from the scattering of my soul. So they asked him, what do you mean? He said, save me from a situation where I have all kinds of businesses and they're all over. And I have to worry about my business in Bangkok and my business in Hong Kong and my business in New York. And I'm always worried about everything I have all over. Let me keep all my things consolidated. So when a person is malbein chasim, when he's affluent and he has all kinds of assets, so then he's going to have a lot of worries. So assets are good. We have to know how to handle them so that they aren't our detriment. Marbe nashim, so ordinarily a person begins by worrying about himself, filling his stomach. Then he worries about his finances. And then he goes on to worry about marriage. And this is the way an intelligent person works. Person has to make sure he has food to eat today and food to eat in the future, and then he has to worry about parnasa. And only after he's ensured that he has parnasa, he has a home to live in, and he has a source of income to support a family, then he thinks about, okay, how am I going to get married? Let me find the right woman. But when a person has many assets, so now he can afford to have more than one wife. So when a person is marbe nashim, when he has many women, marbe cheshafim, he'll end up having a lot of kishuv. Now kishuv, the simple understanding is some kind of sorcery. And on the simple level, the Mishnah means that women, ordinarily, they were the ones that were attracted to this. See, if you have one wife, you could talk to her, you could explain to her, look honey, it's pointless, this is all ijibiji, believe me, this isn't what's worthwhile, let's not waste our time and money on it. You have many wives, so then you don't have as much time to spend with them, then they're going to go after all kinds of ads. And they're going to be interested in all kinds of alternative medicines. You know, one out of 99 are quacks. Nothing wrong with alternative medicine, but you have to be aware that I'd say one out of 999 are fakes. There are many charlatans out there. Just go online and write alternative cure cancer and see how many things, how many people wrote books, and how many people are trying to take your money because they have the cure. The world just hasn't discovered it yet. There's a tendency that women are more attracted by these things than men. So when a person has one wife, so they think things through together. When a person has many wives, he's not going to be able to think it through with all of them, and then there's going to be a situation of Malbech Shafim. Now that's one possible understanding in the Mishnah, but there's another possible understanding in the Mishnah. Why is a person Malbech Nashim? Why is that many women? Because he's not happy with one. And he figures, Chazal tell us, you have a beautiful wife, then that's one of the things that Machivat Da'ato Shel Adam causes a person to have breath of thought. Yeah. A person wants to have breath in his thought, so he should have a pleasant place to live, pleasant instruments to use, and a pleasant looking wife. A person has to feel good about how his wife looks and how his home looks and the things he uses. So a guy says, okay, well, I married her and now she got pregnant and now she ain't so pleasant looking anymore. So let me get another one. Malben Hashim, he has many women. So then what happens? He finds himself not having enough prowess to be with all these women. So what made ginseng such a hot seller? When it got famous as an aphrodisiac. So a person is Malbech Shafim. If he has many women, so he wants to have strength and he wants to enjoy. Why does he have all these women? Because he wants to have to enjoy all the time with the women. So he's going to be looking for all kinds of potents to increase his strength and his stamina. So the Mishnah tells us this is the way things go. Malbe vasal, malbe rima, malbe mechasim, malbe daaga, malbe nashim. You think he has a lot of women, he'll be happy? No, malbech shafim, he'll still be worried about how to have more strength, how to get more out of it. Malbe shefachot, if a person has many maids, malbe zima. So what are these girls going to do all the time? He's going to have problems. There are going to be men, women. He has problems in his house. Malbe avadim, if he has many servants, malbe gazel, then they're going to be stealing him. There's no way you can keep an eye on all your servants. Malbe Torah, after we've spoken of all the physical, that people think, let me get more of this, and more of this, more of this, and they don't think what they're going to lose by it. So then the Mishnah concludes by telling us, but when it comes to the spiritual, it's the other way around. Malbe Torah, if one increases his Torah, malbe chayim, he's increasing life. And here also, things are counterintuitive. When it comes to the physical, we think, if I'll have more, well, things will be better. I'll eat more, it'll be better for me. I'll have more assets, I'll be better. No, you'll worry more. You have to factor that in as well. You have many women? No, you have to factor in you're going to be worried about having more power, etc. So the Mishnah says, and when it comes to Torah, you might think, how does a person acquire Torah? Our sages say you could only acquire Torah if you work so hard that you end up spitting up the milk you nurse. Meaning everything you've learned, you have to rework. Yeah, everything you learned, and nothing's the way you thought it was. Now you have to start from scratch and rethink things through. Torah teaches us what's right, but it's also contradicting what's wrong. And if we didn't grow up with it, and even if we did, we always have to relearn and work things through. When you learn Torah, the last thing you think is you're getting life. If a person is really putting his strength into his Torah, so he feels like there is no life, he's killing himself. Mishnah tells you, no, Mal Bechaim, you're increasing life. That is life. What were we given life for? To delve in Torah. That's the life we were given. It's difficult. You'll tell me, it's not what I'd like to do. If you ask me, I'd much rather go play volleyball. I'd go sunbathe. I'd sit in an air-conditioned room and drink a Kahlua. Yeah, sure, I'd much rather that. Don't get me wrong, I also like that stuff. But if I want life, Mal Be Torah, Mal Bechaim. If you increase Torah, that's when you're really increasing life. The Mishnah is coming in contradistinction with all the things we might think are life. You'd say, this is living. I'm going to have a good steak. That's life. Tells us the Mishnah, Malberima, ultimately you're increasing the worms. You say, no, I'll make good investments. If my stocks go up, I become rich. I invested in gold 3 years ago. I have gold now. It went up such and such percent. I'm a rich man. Tells us the Mishnah, yeah, you're going to have to worry. What's the stock market going to do tomorrow? Okay. We think all kinds of things are life. The Mishnah tells us all the things we might think are life, they have aspects where we don't take those aspects into account, and very often they could dominate our lives. As opposed to that Torah, very often a person thinks, I gotta work, I gotta make parnosa, I gotta spend time with my wife, I gotta do so many things. Tells us the Mishnah, Malbe Torah, Malbe Chaim, he who increases Torah, that's when you're really increasing life. Malbe Yeshiva, when one has many students, Malbe Chochma, then he'll get smarter. The students bring out in a Rebbe things he didn't even know he had. Malbe Itza, when one takes much counsel, Malbe Tvuna, he gets much understanding. You hear other people's vantage point, you hear what other people have to say, you get more understanding. Before many decisions I've made in life, I've always tried to ask as many people as possible. You always have to filter who you listen to and who you don't. But when you hear different vantage points, different people who have different experiences in life, you learn. Malbe Tzedakah, Malbe Shalom. I want to go back to that for a second. Malbe Itza. Very often men feel it's a weakness to ask for advice. And there's a tendency which is more frequent in males than females. Let me keep my problems to myself. Let me keep my life to myself. It can be a big weakness. We at one point, my son was supposed to get a certain medication, and we had a problem that he wasn't sleeping throughout the night. So all night long we were taking shifts staying up with him. And when I came to pick up medication from the pharmacist, so she said, "You're not administering the medication." We'd been administering it for quite a few months. And I said, "I think I know, but maybe you could teach me something new. So what do you have to tell me?" So she said, "Well, you administer it like this, you administer it like that, and you should just know to administer it by 12 o'clock noon, because it makes the kid hyper, and if you give it later than that, he won't sleep all night." So I said, "Thank you. No one told me that until now. It's been months." We tried it, and life looked different. In life, you can get advice. You never know who's going to give you the good piece of advice. The same pharmacist, I started telling her what the doctors were saying. So she said to me, "I had a patient 3 months ago came in here with a similar story. I'll give you their number. They'll give you information. I just read an article. I got the article from her. I got all kinds of information I couldn't find on my own." You talk to people. You hear what they have to say. You gain. Malbe Itza. The more people you take their counsel, Malbe Tzvuna, the more understanding you have. Yeah. You wanted something, Avon?
Why the child was happy?
Because that was one of the things that the medication did. One of the side effects. It made you hyper, so you had to get it into him early, but we never put two and two together. Malbe Tzedakah, Malbe Shalom. When one does a lot of tzedakah, so he increases peace in the world. And he increases peace not only for others, but he increases peace for himself. Because when people know you have a reputation, you're a giving person, so people feel good with you. But it also increases peace in the world. It's a known statistic that when the economy is bad, so abuse in the home goes up. Second, the pressure goes up, so other things go bad. It's difficult. Chazal told us the same thing. Chazal said you could tell the difference between a child that was born in years of famine and a child that was born in years of plenty. Chazal say the countenance is different. Chazal described it as a child born during years of famine is going to look gray, is going to have a scowl. So it doesn't mean literally, I don't think, but it means it affects the child. And a child that was born in years of plenty, so he looks different. Kana, Shem Tov. Once a person has acquired a good name for himself, Kana Latzmo. That's something he's acquired for himself. No one can take that from you. You have a good name, you've acquired something in this world. You've acquired something that will benefit you throughout life. Our sages say, one understanding here is kana le'atzmo is kana atzmuto. That's when you've purchased yourself. Meaning, why are we so careful about what people say about us? We want everyone to think good about us. Why is Lashon Hara so harmful? Because what you're doing is making people think bad about someone. When a person is kana shem tov, when you've reached a point where you've acquired a good name, so then you've acquired yourself really. This is what you want in life. You want people to think you're a positive person. So that's kana le'atzmo. Kana lo divrei Torah, one who's acquired the words of Torah, kana lo chayei olam haba, has also acquired the life of the world to come. Mishnachet, Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai kibel mihilel u'mishamay. Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai got his tradition from Hillel and Shammai. And this is a very important point. Because the Mishnah enumerates, the Gemara enumerates the disciples of Hillel, and it tells us the greatest disciple of Hillel was Yonasan ben Uziel. When he'd learn Torah, the birds that flew over his head would get burnt from the holiness of his learning Torah. The smallest disciple of Hillel was Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. It says that when Hillel was lying on his deathbed, he said, "I want Yochanan ben Zakkai before, is the small one here?" He began by saying, "Is everyone here?" They said, "Yeah." He said, "Where's the small one?" They said, "Oh, we didn't bother bringing him, Yochanan ben Zakkai." So he said, "Call him in. He's running the show. He's going to be the next Nasi," which is something that deserves more introspection. We have to look into it. Why why really did Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, the smallest student of Hillel, why did he become the Nasi following Hillel? But that's something we have to look into. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai we always think of as the disciple of Hillel. And the problem with that is that one of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's students, we're going to learn today, was Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus, the famous Rabbi Eliezer, the first Tana to show up in Shas Mishnayos. Rabbi Eliezer, anytime you have Rabbi Eliezer in the Mishnah, that's referenced to Rabbi Eliezer, the son of the wealthy man Hyrcanus. And we know that Rabbi Eliezer is considered by the Gemara to be Shamuti, that his viewpoint on Halacha is like Beis Shammai. And that's why throughout Halacha we don't go like Rabbi Eliezer. Almost any time you see Rabbi Eliezer's opinion, you could assume Halacha is not like him, even though he shows up throughout Shas. But our tradition is that he was Shamuti, he goes with Shammai. And the question is, being that Rabbi Eliezer was a stark disciple of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, and Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was the small student of Hillel, how do you end up having a student who says everything he learned from his Rebbe? Rabbi Eliezer says everything he learned from Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, and Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was a student of Hillel. So how does he have a student that's a Shamuti? So the answer to that is in the words we just read. That Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, even though he's enumerated as a disciple of Hillel, his tradition was in essence from Hillel and from Shammai. He got the tradition from both of them. And we know there were only 4 points that they differed on, Hillel and Shammai. But the rest of tradition, they had the same tradition. Hu hayah omer, so Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai would frequently say, Im lamadta Torah harbeh, if you've learned a lot of Torah, al tasik tova la'atzmecha. Don't give yourself credit. Don't say, yeah, I've learned. No, ki lechach notzalta, that's how you were fashioned. God gave you the talent. God gave you the ability. God gave you good memory. God gave you a sharp mind. So God gave you the zitzfleisch, the patience. So that's why you got where you got. But a person shouldn't look at others and say, ah, he didn't finish a tenth of what I did. Well, maybe he didn't have that potential. Maybe he outdid his potential and you haven't yet reached yours. You don't only measure things by quantity. This is one of the first things the Mabit discusses in the Beit Elokim. The Mabit wrote a philosophical work called the Beit Elokim. The Mabit was a contemporary of Rav Yosef Karo. And in the Beit Elokim, one of the first points he says is, we don't know how to gauge the world to come. We don't look at the outcome alone. We say, what was the potential? And each person has a different potential. So it could be that one person will learn only an hour a day, but he'll get more than someone else that learned 10 hours a day. If the guy that learned 10 hours had a potential for 15, and he only learned 10, so then he's only done 2/3 of his potential. If the other guy had a potential for an hour and he did that hour, so he fulfilled his potential. Yeah.
2 questions. The Beit Elokim, where did he live?
I think he was in Tzfat. No, the Beit Yosef was in Tzfat. He was in Yerushalayim.
Second question: how do we check out our potential?
You push and you push without going crazy. And I stress that without going crazy. No, many people think, I heard these great people, they used to wake up a second, so I could wake up a second. So they get up early and they spend all morning falling asleep over the Gemara. And they say, yeah, but I'm going to learn 20 hours a day. I want to be a great sage in Torah. So a person has to do things in a way that's going to work. A person should begin by sleeping 8 hours a day and make the most of the time and say that. He sees that that works, he should continue doing that for a few years. He sees that that works, he should add a half hour, slowly. It's very important to go slowly. Usually when he'll add the half hour, he'll discover it doesn't work. So let him go back to sleeping the 8 hours or 7 hours, whatever he needs. And most of us cannot do that. We can fulfill our potential by getting the sleep we need. There's a story, I don't know if it's true, but the message is true. Someone once came to the Gra and said he wants to fast and do all kinds of things that pious people do. So the Gra said, no, that'll weaken you from your learning Torah, don't do that. So the guy said to the Gra, but you do it, what do you mean? How can you tell me not to do it? So the story goes that the Gra was sitting down and he picked up a finger and pushed the guy, and the guy was thrown across the room to the other side. And the Gra said, God gave me extra strength. You see, you can't do what I just did. God gave me strength that other people don't have, so I can do things that other people don't do. The story goes that when the Gra was a little boy, he picked up a rod of iron and he bent it in two. He was given extraordinary strength, so he was able to use it. But we have to know our limitations. We're not the Gra.
Who's Gra?
Gaon of Elyon Mivilna.
Ah, really?
Yeah.
It's quite a similar story. Someone once asked
question was Bob Shirley asked earlier, how come you said I cannot go to university? You went to university. And so the Rebbe's response was, somebody jumped off of a two-story building and lived. Did you also jump?
So back to Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, the sages tell us, this quote-unquote small student of Hillel's, this student, our sages say, covered all of Tanakh, all of Mishnah, all of Halacha, all of Agada, all of our tradition he mastered. This was the small student of Hillel. So he said, if you've learned a lot, don't give yourself credit. God fashioned you so you could do it. Yeah?
If the smaller student accomplishes all the tradition, what did the other student in comparison to them?
It's a good question.
If you learn everything which there is, what...
I guess there's always room for more. Chamisha talmidim ayu lo l'Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai had five major students. Ve'elu hen, now we're going to enumerate them. The first one is Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkanus, and he's, anytime we read about Rabbi Eliezer in the Mishnah, that's Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkanus. He was married to Ima Shalom. His wife was famous, her name was Ima Shalom. She was the sister of Rabbi Gamliel the Nasi. You guys know the famous story where Rabbi Gamliel put him in ostracism, and every day his wife Ima Shalom ensured that after Shmoneh Esrei she'd distract him so he wouldn't do Tachanun, because she knew that Tachanun is a powerful prayer. Once we put our head down in request of God directly following the Shmoneh Esrei, so that's that prayer has extra special powers. So she said, I have to distract him. Every day she'd walk in with another excuse to distract him after Shmoneh Esrei so he wouldn't hit Tachanun. One day she was detained by the door, or she thought it was Rosh Chodesh, and she didn't realize that it was only one day Rosh Chodesh, and he finished his Shmoneh Esrei, and he put his head down. And when she came in and saw that, she said, uh-oh, and then the horns were sounded that in Rabbi Gamliel's house he'd passed away. So she knew what she was doing. So Ima Shalom was Rabbi Gamliel's sister. Rabbi Gamliel, her brother, was the one who had placed Rabbi Eliezer in Nidui, in Cherem. And Rabbi Eliezer was very hurt by it. And in heavens they agreed with Rabbi Eliezer, but the rabbis agreed with Rabbi Gamliel. So that one time that Rabbi Eliezer put down his head, that's it, that prayer knocked out in Rabbi Gamliel's home. So this is Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkanus, the disciple of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Yeah?
He didn't go to the shul?
He wasn't allowed to go to shul, right? The next student is Rabbi Yoshua ben Hananya. Anytime we encounter Rabbi Yoshua in the Mishnah, it's Rabbi Yoshua ben Hananya. And Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Eliezer were counterparts. Even though Rabbi Eliezer began as Rabbi Yeshua's disciple, we know that Rabbi Eliezer, till the age of 26, didn't learn a word, didn't know how to say Shema, he didn't know how to bench, he didn't know anything. And then he wanted to learn Torah, and his father told him, you're an old man already, go get married, have children, they'll learn Torah. His father Hyrcanus was a wealthy man, all the children were plowing, and Eliezer was there plowing, and he started crying, and his father comes and tells him, what you crying for? And he says, I want to learn Torah. And his father says, not now, you're too old for that. Say, get married and have kids, they'll learn Torah. And he keeps crying, and finally Eliyahu appears to him, tells him, you want to learn Torah? Go to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. So he goes up to Jerusalem, and he goes to learn by Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, and he's a guest in Rabbi Yeshua ben Hananiah's home. Rabbi Yeshua is a poor blacksmith, but he takes in this young man, Eliezer. Eliezer doesn't tell them he's the son of this great noble Hurkanus. If they know, then they're messing with the great noble. He doesn't say a word. And for 2 weeks, Rabbi Yeshua assumes he's eating by Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai assumes he's eating by Rabbi Yeshua. And he's been eating grass off the field. Now, how does he get to learn Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai? He walks in and starts crying. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai asks him, why are you crying? So he says, I want to learn Torah. So he says, okay, what do you know? Do you know how to bench? You know Birkat HaMazon? He says, no. Do you know Shema? He says, no. So he says, okay, I'll teach you. So he teaches him, and then he says, okay, go. So Rabbi Eliezer starts crying. So he says, what are you crying for? He says, I want to learn Torah. You just taught me two things. I want to know Torah. So he sees that the young man really wants to learn, so he tells him, come to me each day, and I'll teach you two halachot. And from those two halachot a day, Rabbi Eliezer would review and review and review, and he became the great Rabbi Eliezer. Okay, we'll finish the story. His father, Hyrcanus, the other son said to him, Dad, look at Eliezer, he didn't listen to you. He left all the work for all of us, he doesn't do his portion, so go up to Jerusalem and ostracize him, take a vow before the sages that he won't inherit a penny. So Hyrcanus comes up to Jerusalem, and the students, they know who Rabbi Eliezer is. I skipped a part of the story, I'm sorry. Let's go back a second. So Eliezer has been learning two halachas a day, and 2 weeks pass, and one day he's standing before Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, and Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai smells a foul smell from his mouth. So he tells him, why don't you stand over there while we talk? And Rabbi Eliezer starts crying. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai tells him, son, what are you crying for? So he says, you're treating me like a leper. This is how you treat us too. You make me stand far away. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai tells him, okay, I bless you. Just as the smell came up from your mouth before me, the smell of the words of Torah should go up from your mouth to before Hashem, your Father in heaven. And then he verifies, and they discover that for 2 weeks he's had no food because each one assumed he was eating by the other one. So there's a lesson to be learned in that. At any rate, he's been learning for a while, and then the kids convince the father, Hyrcanus, to go and banish him from the inheritance. The father comes up to the great assembly before Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, and he's approaching the academy, and the students, they all know that this is Eliezer's father. So they tell Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, hey, Eliezer's dad's come to town. So Eliezer's grown a beard by now, and he's learning there. And the father, he's an important person, Hyrcanus, he's a very wealthy person. So when he comes into the academy, they set him up with the Rosh Hashiva at the dais. And Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai tells the students, when Eliezer comes to sit down, make sure he has no place to sit. Keep bumping him up. Tell him, no, there's a seat up there. So they bump him up until he's finally at the dais. And Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai tells him, face the students. So he's facing students, and he doesn't see his father behind him. And he tells him, you give the lecture today. So Eliezer says, me? I can't give a lecture before you. So Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai says, okay, I'll step out. You give the lecture today, I'm stepping out. Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai leaves the room, and Rav Eliezer starts giving the lecture, and the Medrash says he spoke words of Torah that no one had ever heard before. He took everything his Rebbe taught him and knew how to expand it even more. He was just pouring out Torah, and Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai snuck up behind him and kissed him on his forehead and blessed him. What a wonderful fruit you are. What a wonderful child, how you've learned Torah. And Rav Yochanan Hyrcanus has just come in to ostracize his son from Torah. And he asks, who was that lecturer? Who was Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai saying, wow, what a wonderful son you are. But blessed is your father. So they tell him, oh, that's Eliezer ben Hyrcanus. So Hyrcanus gets up and says, that's my boy. So he says, I came here to ostracize everyone else. You're getting all the inheritance. I'm signing it all over to you and I'm ostracizing them. And Rav Eliezer says, Dad, I don't want that. I don't want that. That's not what I need. I'm not in this world for the physical. That's not what I need. I don't ostracize them. So that's the famous Rav Eliezer ben Hyrcanus. And Rav Eliezer ben Hyrcanus became counterparts with Rav Yeshua ben Hanania, even though he began as a student, really. He began as his guest, living in Rav Yeshua ben Hanania's home. He grew up, and he grew in learning, and he and Rav Yeshua ben Hanania were both students of Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai. And there are stories in the Medrash of Rav Eliezer and Rav Yeshua that are almost identical to the stories of Hillel and Shammai, with the ger coming and saying, teach me on one foot, teach me on this condition, on that condition, that Rabbi Eliezer was Shamuti, went in the footsteps of Shammai, said, get out of here, I'm not teaching you. And Rabbi Yeshua was a disciple of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, the disciple of Hillel, and he, it seems, stuck more to the Hillel side of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. He accepted him more warmly and patiently. So Rabbi Yeshua ben Hanania is the second student of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Now, Rabbi Yeshua ben Hanania was Levi. He used to sing beautifully in the Beit HaMikdash, and he lived till the time of the destruction of the temple. Meaning he lived a very long life. Now, Rabbi Yeshua ben Hanania was also a politician. He was well known by the Caesar's house. The next student of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was Rabbi Yossi HaKohen. And the fourth student is Rabbi Ishmael ben Netanel. And he married the granddaughter of Rabbi Gamliel HaZaken. The next student is Rabbi Elazar ben Aroch, and we'll still talk about him. Some say he was Rabbi Nehorai. When the Gemara quotes Rabbi Nehorai, the one who gave light, that's Rabbi Elazar ben Aroch. Some say he was Rabbi Nehemiah, and some say that Rabbi Elazar ben Aroch is the famous Rabbi Meir. So we have these five students of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Hu haya mone shivchan. He used to discuss each one's praise, each one's positive attribute. They were each exceptional in their own way. Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus, now these attributes have relevance halachically, the different attributes of the different students. But I think we're going to pause now. We'll pick up over here, Bezrat Hashem. Next week, we're in the middle of Mishnah Chet. So what we see today, let's just review. We saw the Mishnah about he who tries to have much in the physical, each one has a negative aspect. And then we saw that if you try to have much in Torah, in students, in advice, in tzedakah, acquiring a good name in Torah, those things are things that are eternally lasting. We went on to discuss Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, the student of Hillel and Shammai, who said, don't give yourself credit just because you've learned a lot of Torah, God fashioned you in a way that fits for you. And then we discussed the history of the different students of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, Peter of Lezer ben Hyrcanus, who began learning at a late age but became a great sage, Peter of Yeshua ben Hananya, who was a poor blacksmith, and we discussed the relationship between Rabbi Lezer and Rabbi Yeshua, Peter of Yosef Kohen, Rabbi Shimon ben Netanel, and we ended off with Rabbi Lazar ben Aroch. Yeah.